and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you out there, cowards? Hey, good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron. How you doing, man?
Nice to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, man.
I was away, if you didn't know that. I was away this weekend. I had to go up to Seattle, to the great Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, just miles, just hours, just moments away from Brian and Everett and his singing piano. I looked at Everett. I was on a ferry, man. I'll tell you something. If I ever retire, even if I don't retire, if I ever get run out of this town or whatever and I got about a few grand saved, I will go directly to the Pacific Northwest. I would live in Seattle or that area in a second, my friend.
It's a beautiful, beautiful area of the country, but are you going to stay with Brian until you...
No, I'm not. I got nothing to do with Brian. My wife's family's from up there, and I went
you got a place to stay there.
I want to go to... We went out to this place called Whidbey Island, and we took the ferry out there and, you know, hung out for a night. It was gorgeous. I went up there for some family stuff. My wife's grandmother turned 90 years old.
Oh, congratulations.
Happy birthday there, Oma. Good work. She made it. That's not bad, huh? 90 years old.
90 years old. You know what? One thing that amazes me about Seattle when I was out there, you have those buses where they have, like, these bike racks in the front. That was the first time I had ever seen that.
Yeah.
Where they, like, you know, people actually commute by bus, and then they take their bicycles the last leg of their trip.
My mother-in-law drives one of them buses, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, and my father-in-law, my niece and stepfather, drives a trolley. Yeah, he's a trolley operator. Yeah, I mean, it's just a beautiful city. It's beautiful.
It
it's a beautiful landscape. I just love those islands off of there. Man, I would live up there in a second.
Uh-oh.
Can we all move there? Can we go?
Do it? We could be an ISDN line away.
So let's talk. Yeah, I know. I could be there. You could be here. I could be broadcasting from the great Pacific Northwest in the middle of the night. The time thing would be a little different. I got to listen to you and Gelman a little bit. That was interesting.
Oh, me and News Daddy?
Listening to my show on the radio while I'm there. I got to listen to a little bit.
Don't worry. He's not being allowed on the premises until after 7 o'clock, so you don't have to worry about him trying to, you know.
So let's get into this. John Bolton shut down again by the Democrats.
Yeah!
The Democrats blocked another attempt to confirm John Bolton as U.S. ambassador to the U.N. That was yesterday. George Bush says he might install him. I didn't even realize that he could do that.
Yeah.
That there's a special, rarely used power under the Constitution that he could just install him, but only temporarily. Is that the way that works, Riley?
Well, yeah. He would be installed until January of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the process would start again, I assume. I don't know if he's going to do that. Condoleezza Rice, I believe, over the weekend hinted that the president might, in fact, do that because he really wants, you know, a reformer like John Bolton in, you know, dealing with the United Nations. I think he's in. This borders on insanity.
Wouldn't it show an innate disrespect for the process of government, as if this guy isn't out to lunch enough? This particular president, wouldn't taking an action like that, appointing an ambassador to the UN without a vote from the Senate, wouldn't that just say, "I don't care. I don't care about, you know, Republicans or Democrats. I'm the king here. I am the leader. I'm the Führer. I can do what I want."
You remember what he said right after the election?
What?
"I got political capital, and I intend to spend it. This is how he intends to spend it."
Would that be considered political capital or just insane power tripping? I mean, really?
Both. But from his vantage point, he made a decision and he's sticking to the decision. And that decision is that John Bolton, a man who, from all public documentation, seems temperamentally unsuited for the job. Never mind the information which is what this is all hinging on. All the Senate wants is some information from the White House about some of Bolton's activities, specifically his request to get information about people who were being monitored by the NSA.
Yes, this guy's been nothing but an obstacle to diplomacy around the world, and more comes out about that every day. Porter Goss, the new head of the CIA, says he has a quote-unquote excellent idea where Osama bin Laden is hiding, but the U.S. United States, this is great, he says, but the United States' respect for sovereign nations makes it more difficult to capture him. Quote, when you go to the question of dealing with sanctuaries and sovereign states. You're dealing with the problem of our sense of international obligation, fair play, end quote. Like that has ever been a concern of this administration. Porter Goss, in an attempt to be able to sit at the adults table again, you said that, look, I know the secret place. I know where Osama's hiding. I think he might be in the basement of the White House. Maybe I'm wrong, but take a look downstairs because those tapes are coming out of somewhere. But I think that Porter Goss is making an attempt here to say, come on, count me in, fellas, because John Negroponte, who is the National Intelligence Director, is the cat who is doing all the briefings for the president.
See, this is a very disingenuous little drop that Porter Goss did here. He has been upset about the fact that Negroponte has usurped not just his role, but the traditional role of director of Central Intelligence. He's got essentially a no-show gig at this point. So what better thing to do than to drop in an interview that, yeah, I know where he is, but and the inference is Negroponte doesn't.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me is it becomes clear that he was put there. I don't know if it was some sort of retribution, but Porter Goss was put there to take the hits of, you know, of everyone who's in that agency who's bitter, who's had enough, who feels who was helped, used and abused by the Bush administration, who, you know, who was there's a lot of malcontent over there. And I think they threw it to Goss and said, look, you see if you can clean it up. That's your job. And you can't play with the big boys until you figure out a way how to manufacture intelligence that behooves our goals in a way that is not going to be found out, and then we'll let you play.
You know, he's going to be, I think, very unpleasantly surprised when he realizes that a lot of the fallout from the Downing Street memo is going to wash on his agency. Remember, George Tenet was up to his eyeballs in all of this foolishness.
Yeah.
When it comes to the intelligence assessments that the British used in that Downing Street memo, they came from George Tenet's CIA, some of the same guys who are upset now with the direction that the agency's taking.
Absolutely. And speaking of, you know, law enforcement agencies, you know, people concerned about the Patriot Act and the new provisions that will enable them to do even more in terms of, looking for information, monitoring what library books we check out. Law enforcement officials have made at least 200 formal and informal inquiries to libraries for info on reading material and other internal matters since October 2001. This is according to a new study commissioned by the American Library Association. All right, now this is like, you know, this comes at the heels of the Patriot Act up for sort of approval of new provisions. This study doesn't say whether or not the Patriot Act was used to get the info specifically because they couldn't ask librarians because of the secrecy provisions of the law. See, they didn't want to put librarians in a position to break the law, but they said that there was up to at least 200 formal, informal inquiries. And this, you know, in comparison to, dig this is amazing to me. The Y-12 National Security Complex near Knoxville, Tennessee, warehouses enriched uranium and dismantles and stores weapons. Now, 16 illegal immigrants gained access to the plant last year as construction workers. All right, they got creds, they got their badges, and they were there in the middle of uranium enriching. There were plans on the tables, apparently, Riley. And this is mind-blowing to me. They're worried about which books we're checking out, yet 16 cats who, you know, were not even legal were working at construction at a place where they stored enriched uranium.
And do you know why? Do you know why those jobs didn't go to native Tennesseans? Does anybody want to know? Because Tennessee is a right-to-work state. So they don't have any unions down there. And how do they fill these jobs? At very inexpensive rates. They hire illegals just like they do here in New York, about five blocks from here.
But talking about a security breach, I mean, it's like it's not an issue of I don't know what country they were from or whether that makes a difference. It's just the fact that they had fake green cards and were allowed into a nuclear facility to do construction work. And apparently the Department of Energy's Inspector General found, quote, official use only documents, unquote, lying around in a construction trailer. Just laying there. Here's how you make a bomb. Oh, should we take this? I don't know.
Well, they're more interested in what Mark Maron took out of the public library last week.
I haven't been to the public library in a long time to check out a book. I don't even have an updated library card. I should get one because, you know, it's nice to sit in the library, I think, a little bit.
Well, hey, what happens when they start going to places like our friends at the Strand Bookstore and asking exactly what did you buy there? Because that's the next step after the libraries. Don't think that this is going to end at libraries.
Dude, they should just come upstairs and see the books we get here every day.
I know.
About what authors want to get out
of
the air. Yeah. we've got some, I got some, you know, some trick questions for you.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and, you know, before we take on the next topic. Here, how about this? Let's see. Here's a little quiz, and I want you to tell me which, you know, international dictator did these things. His own laundry. This is recently.
Mm-hmm.
This is a person who loves to eat Raisin Bran Crunch for breakfast, but never eats Fruit Loops. He has a tattoo on the underside of his forearm of a four-legged animal that he got when he was 8 or 9, and he traded 10 watermelons for it.
Got 10 watermelons.
10 watermelons for
Kim
a tattoo.
Kim Jong-il?
Maybe. Once you hang in there, and coming up next, we'll go into more of this and who it was at 16 past the hour on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark, and that's Mark. Have a good morning. Stay with us here.
Morning Sedition.
This is the Wake Up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now. 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. How do you like that? We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Come on down. We'll have free coffee and tons of giveaways. Plus, we'll be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame and New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller. So come by, say hello, and again, you can touch Mark Riley.
Wait a minute.
Oh, yes. Mark Maron, me. How do you like that? We'll be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, this Saturday night. For tickets, call 201-727-1090 or go to bananascomedyclub.com. And, folks, my mother just sent a check to me for the for the camp benefit. We're raising money.
Thanks.
We're raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. This is a real deal. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for a child. 1 week, $350. Come on, kick it in. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. My mother did not do that. Sent the check directly to me.
There you go.
I got a check this morning from my mother, Kayla. From my mother. Here's $100. Give it to the guy in charge of the camp thing. Thanks, Mom. Appreciate it. So Joe Biden has said that he's seeking the Democratic nomination for president in 2008. We're going to talk about that in just a second. What I want to talk about right now is, did you figure out who those cute quirks were and who they belonged to? Now, I'm only saying cute because, you know, it's a little you wouldn't assume that this guy had these behavioral traits. But in her story, Tuesdays with Saddam, appearing in the July issue of GQ, correspondent Lisa DiPaolo, who will be with us tomorrow, interviews five U.S. soldiers who guarded and got to know Saddam Hussein over a period of 298 days. Now, some of these things, it's amazing. It's like that weird feeling I had when they showed Saddam in his underwear.
Yeah.
On the post, I was like, you shouldn't do that to a guy. I mean, even if it is Saddam Hussein, he's in his underpants. You know what I mean? Come on. Who? You wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. You know, even though he was a killer and horrendous tyrant. But this stuff is even worse in a funnier way.
It's weird. I mean, these are five relatively young guys from the Pennsylvania National Guard, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
They have just been rotated out of Iraq, which is why they're talking, because they weren't allowed to talk before this. But they go into some pretty interesting detail, Mark, and I'm feeling that you're going to get enough comedy bits here to last for about another week or so.
But I don't know if they're comedy bits or it's just like the fact these are things you never wanted to you didn't really want to be in a position to be able to say that's Saddam is sort of silly. You know, that's just silly. I mean, if you read some of the stuff that's going to be appearing in this article, loves to eat Raisin Bran Crunch for breakfast, but never Fruit Loops.
Nope.
Just the moment where they give Saddam Fruit Loops, and he goes, no, please, no, that Fruit Loops I don't like. Too many colors, don't like it. You know, that I have to picture this guy who we've been, you know, sort of, you know, taught to hate and has done very many hateable, inhumane acts in his life, is sitting there with a bowl of Fruit Loops going, oh, not for me. No, I don't like the Fruit Loops. But and then there's other stuff, too. He's a clean freak, obsessive compulsive about washing his hands after touching others' hands, methodically wiping down silverware before using it. He likes to share home remedies with his guards.
Yeah.
For sore muscles, he recommends garlic water and hot sauce. Just rub it on there. Just go ahead, rub it. Here, let me mix it for you, please. Then I'll wash my hands.
All drinks must be room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't eat beef, likes fish and chicken. only salads with Italian dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. And, you know, the Mark, the amazing thing about all this is he apparently told these guards that he is confident not only he's going to beat the trial, but he's going to come back to power someday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's weird. I don't know if this is a campaign strategy or maybe that. You know, it's questionable. Why is this stuff coming out now that we, you know, all of a sudden we've got this very human, and this is a guy that George W. Bush has sold to us as, like, this guy's a madman. He's the tyrant. And he very well may have been a tyrant, as was well established, but now we're getting a portrait of not a madman, but an old man who doesn't like Fruit Loops.
Enjoys
Doritos. But what's going on with this? I mean, it's sort of, is it coincidental that this story is coming out when they're looking for an exit strategy? Wouldn't that be just a heinous revelation if they said, you know what, we're leaving and we're letting Saddam
back. Hey, Saddam, yeah. By the way.
You're back in.
It came out that actually during the fall of Baghdad, he took a cab out of town. He said the Americans bombed the wrong palace. So I guess they can call him another one and bring him back to the same palace, and he can just pick up where he left off.
He apparently loved Reagan,
yeah.
And he thinks, if I can quote Saddam Hussein, quote, the Clinton, he's okay.
The Clinton.
The Bush father and son, no good.
Yeah.
It's no good, these Bushes are no good. But he likes Reagan, and apparently he in the end he just wanted to talk with Bush and make peace with him, quote, he thought that Bush could forgive and forget about what has happened. He knows I have nothing. He goes, yeah, he knows I have nothing, no mass weapons. He knows he'll never find them, which doesn't actually say that they're not there, but he does say that he'll never find them.
Wow. Do you think he's delusional about that? I mean, do you really think that he believes that the world's going to let him come back into power, that he's going to beat this trial?
No, but I think he believes that when he was taken out militarily and that, you know, that what he established for himself was that he was the king and ruler and president of Iraq. And as far as he knows in his head, he still was. That whatever has gone on since then, is he doesn't condone it or say it's okay. So in his little cell, he's still the leader of Iraq.
Iraq was a much nicer place when I ran it. I may have had to kill thousands of people, but it was a better place.
My grandmother said that about Vegas and the mafia. My grandmother always used to say that. She used to say, you know, it was nicer when the boys ran things.
Ran things, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joe Biden is, you know, a questionable character. He wasn't always in my head. I used to like the way he would stand up to the Bush administration. I liked his tone. I liked his conviction. But he's done a lot of things that, you know, certainly transgressed the Democratic ideals and as far as the Democratic Party goes. And he wants to be the Democratic nomination for president. We're going to go into why. It may not be a good idea, and certainly why he doesn't speak for all Democrats. That's coming up next here on Air America's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. It's 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
There's a reason why we signed these treaties. To protect my son in the military. That's why we have these treaties. So when Americans are captured, they are not tortured. That's the reason. In case anybody forgets it. That's the reason.
That's the good Senator Joe Biden. It's 34 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
That was Joe Biden being good Biden. Unfortunately, there's some bad Biden that we'll discuss in just a minute. You know, good Biden was talking about the Geneva Conventions and why they were important when it comes to international conflict. And bad Biden, of course, one who spearheads bankruptcy laws and acts at the behest of credit card companies, among other things, and speaks down about Howard Dean. We don't like that.
No.
We don't like that here at Morning Edition, people talking bad about Howard Dean. And sometimes when you read the headlines, folks, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So thank God we got the machine. Kayla, are you and I okay, man?
Oh, I believe so.
Is there a problem? I feel like there's tension. Is there tension? Because I just, like, maybe I'm not getting enough attention. What's going on, buddy? We okay?
Maybe there's some sexual tension between you and I.
Ooh.
Wait, but usually...
I used to love the fat guy.
And I'm not really that fat.
No. I might have to lose some pounds, my friend.
What are you talking about, buddy? I may be getting a little pudgy, but I'm certainly not in the...
I used to love the fat guys.
Mode. Some guy wanted to know what this is.
Free gum? Free gum? Free gum?
some guy wrote an email that said, are you saying freak on or free gum, and where did it come from? Well, let me tell you, back shortly before Kayla was a radio person.
Not shortly. The job,
back in the day, man.
The job that Kayla had before, just, you know, like weeks before he became a board op here at Air America, was he used to drive an ice cream truck. And these kids would come up to the ice cream truck and say,
free gum, free gum, free gum.
Because apparently some other ice cream truck gave them gum. And Chris would say,
I used to love the fat guys.
And the kids would walk off confused. But, you know, Am I getting the story wrong?
A little bit. I don't know. It might be a little foggy in my memory.
Oh, well, we'll get into that later. I got no time right now.
Yeah, sure.
But we've got the iNews 5000 to decode some headlines, so let's do that. All right, here we go. Here we go. From the New York Times. And, of course, if you come to see us live in Brooklyn at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9, I promise you, Brendan P.W. McDonald will do the iNews intro live. From the New York Times, Democrats block a vote on Bolton for the second time. Feed that in there. Democrats block a vote on Bolton for the second time. Translation here, enraged Bolton Hulk turns green, destroys first 10 floors of UN. From ABC, U.S. General says Iraq recruits suicide bombers online. U.S. General says Iraq recruits suicide bombers online. Translation is, over 100 terrorists respond to Nerve.com ad, 72 virgins seeking martyred hero for long-term relationship.
Oh, Lord.
From NBC.com, a huge sinkhole opens on West 56th Street. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Huge sinkhole opens on West 56th Street. Translation, Bloomberg unveils Olympic swimming venue. So what are you talking about? Right around the corner here? What is that?
No, 56. All right, 56 is
between 5th and 6th. A hole just happened?
Nobody fell in the hole, but apparently there's a piece of roadway that was supported by something that just gave way.
Maybe it was a giant clam.
Well, maybe so. Or maybe, they fill it up. You can go swimming.
It's a giant clam, Riley. I'm sorry, man. I was on the beach.
That's right. You were. I forgot.
In the Pacific Northwest on Whidbey Island.
So you
on
don't
the
care
beach,
about sinkholes in Manhattan anymore.
Watching my beautiful wife dig for clams with her hands, insisting that she could catch one. And apparently they're very fast. You go out there, you walk on the beach, and you see all these little bubbles, and these are clams that they dig in. It was low tide, and you see these little holes where the clams are, and there are so many that if you just sort of step on where all these holes are, the beach will give way because the clams start freaking out and digging deeper. They can run underground in the sand. My wife is like jamming. She's trying to get the clam, and I'm like, take it easy. This isn't appealing. She swore that she could catch a clam, and she caught none. No clams caught.
No clams?
No
clams caught.
Nope. Uh-huh. But apparently they got, they used to have those long shovels. We can get into clamming. because there was a day way back in the day when I was like 6, I did some clamming.
Uh-oh.
I'm not a pro or nothing, but I remember the shovels. But apparently they've moved past shovels on into Joe Biden wanting to run for president. It's a new thing. Senator Joe Biden, all right, announced on Sunday that he would seek the Democratic nomination for president in 2008. Now, he's been out on the road, testing his talking points that are hanging on a message of criticism of the war and how it has been waged, but not demanding a timeline for troop withdrawal. All right, he apparently was in Virginia, South Carolina, and Florida, out there, training, testing his message. But more importantly, he was on the Imus show. He was on Dine Imus' show. Not that I'm bitter that he wasn't on our show, but I think we have talked to him once.
We talked to him at Biden, least once, yeah.
And quote, this is a quote of Joe Biden. Quote, the Democratic chairman, that is Howard Dean, does not speak for me, an elected United States senator. No party official speaks for me anytime, any place, under any circumstances, and I think the rhetoric is counterproductive. He thinks that Howard Dean's rhetoric is counterproductive. This is a guy that led the fight to pass a bankruptcy bill, that voted against limiting the interest credit card companies can gouge consumers with. He voted against limiting predatory lending. He voted against protecting consumers when their identity is stolen. He voted for the Iraq War and voted to confirm Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. But he says that Howard Dean's rhetoric is counterproductive to the Democratic message.
Joe Biden, like a lot of other people that want to become president in 2008,
mm-hmm.
is scampering toward the center of the Democratic Party. I mean, that's essentially what he's doing. When you look at that record.
You mean the sinkhole?
The sinkhole, yes. As a matter of fact, he's on his way to 56. Ironically enough, you know, there was a helicopter crash. You were out of town, Mark. There was a helicopter crash Friday afternoon here in New York. And the people that were on that helicopter are from MBNA, which is the big, they're the world's largest credit card holders.
So was Biden out there in waders trying to help the guys?
Well, remember, they were flying to Wilmington, to his home state. That's where they were trying to get to at the time this whole thing happened.
MBNA is his biggest campaign contributors. He is owned by the credit card companies. You know, and it's a shame, you know, in certain respects, stop saying you know, in certain respects, because I like the way I like Biden's conviction. I like the way he talks. He's a good showman. He's an aggressive politician. If it weren't for, you know, these horrendous decisions and the fact that he was, you know, he is owned and operated by the credit card industry, you know, I thought that his passion might have been good, but, there's just too much. Stop saying you know, would you? I'm sorry, I'm addressing the little man in my head.
Not
sitting up there going,
you know.
I mean, instead of pausing, in my head some days, there's a little man that just insists on saying, you know.
Joe Biden here is gambling, Mark. Mm. What he's gambling on is, now leave aside the bankruptcy bill for a second. The other stuff has to do with national security. Biden believes that the 2008 election will hinge on which candidate the American people feel will be stronger on national security, which is essentially what they did with Bush just last year.
Well, that's his pitch.
That's his pitch, yeah.
He's a guy that says, look, the Iraq war is going badly. I can't say we got to get out because if we get out too soon, it'll look like a victory for the jihadists. But we got to make some decisions here. We got to make some American decisions that are based on honoring international law and getting our troops out in a relatively short span of time, but no commitment to a timeline. He is a guy that's really using the Iraq war to sort of mobilize.
To try and burn his credentials. But you know what's going to come back to bite him?
Uh-huh.
Voting against protecting consumers when their identity is stolen. There's so much identity theft going on out here. Joe Biden could pay dearly for being on the wrong side of that issue.
That's right. We've got a guest coming up in a few minutes, Shelby Knox, the subject of the documentary film, The Education of Shelby Knox, who will discuss her efforts to promote comprehensive sex education in the abstinence-only world of Lubbock, Texas, a town with the highest teen pregnancy and STD rates in the state of Texas. The Education of Shelby Knox airs on PBS POV tonight. Now, this is an interesting thing that we've talked about before, because these abstinence-only education programs mislead teenagers and preteens, not preteens, but junior high students, about sexually transmitted diseases, about the roles of men and women in the world. I mean, a lot of American youngsters that participated in a federally funded abstinence program have been taught over the past 3 years that abortion can lead to sterility and suicide, that half the gay male teenagers in the United States have tested positive for the AIDS virus, and that touching a person's genitals, quote, can result in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. This was an analysis led by Congressman Henry Waxman's office in December 2004. And it says that, you know, it says pregnancy results 1 out of every 7 times a couple uses a condom. This is on pregnancy. Sexual Health Today claims touching someone's genitals can result in pregnancy, which is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Also, it says things like, quote, women gauge your happiness and judge your success on their relationships. Men's happiness and success hinge on their accomplishments. Also, choosing the best, which is part of the curriculum, the abstinence-only curriculum, includes the fairy tale of a knight who decides not to marry the princess because she offered successful tips on slaying a dragon, leaving him feeling ashamed. He marries a maiden instead, quote, only after making sure she knew nothing about nooses or poison, end quote. Moral of the story, occasional suggestions and assistance may be all right, but too much of it will lessen a man's confidence or even turn him away from his princess.
It's incredible. And you know, Shelby Knox fought a very, very lonely battle, I would imagine, trying to promote something other than this nonsense in a town like Lubbock, Texas.
But what's interesting, and I'm looking forward to talking to her, is that the facts of teen pregnancy are on her side.
Yes.
That abstinence only, really achieves nothing. And it's going to be interesting to talk about her fight against the forces of abstinence only, because when you're fighting the forces of the abstinence only, you're fighting the forces of Family Research Council, you're fighting the forces of the Christian right, you're fighting an incredible propaganda momentum. And this is one girl, one woman, Shelby Knox, the subject of the documentary film, The Education of Shelby Knox, on PBS POV tonight. We will be talking to her next here on Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. You're listening to Air America. It's 45 past the hour.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. how's that gonna look in the deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Not a clear my name.
Next message.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With reason. This is Air America Radio.
More in non-mortgage debt, call now. 800-401-9418. 800-401-9418.
If a student asks a teacher about sex, the teacher, by policy, is required to answer with abstinence is the only way to prevent STDs in teen pregnancy. And that's all they are allowed to say. If they don't, they're in danger of losing their job.
That was Shelby Knox from the documentary film called The Education of Shelby Knox, which airs on PBS tonight. The Education of Shelby Knox is a documentary film about 15-year-old Shelby Knox, who was from a very Christian and very conservative town of Lubbock, Texas, who took a virginity pledge promising to abstain from sex until her wedding day. But after she researched abstinence-only education and found that her own town had one of the highest rates of teen pregnancies and STDs in the state, she became an activist for sex education, causing quite a stir in Lubbock. The Education of Shelby Knox received high praise at the Sundance Film Festival, and as I said, it airs on PBS tonight. Shelby Knox joins us on the phone this morning from Texas. Good morning, Shelby.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. So tell us about the True Love Waits Pledge. What is that exactly?
The True Love Waits Pledge is something that you take in front of God, family, and your church, pledging to abstain from having sex until your wedding night.
So you got to go up in front of, like, hundreds of people?
Right. Go up in front of hundreds of people and promise no sex until marriage.
It's a lot of pressure, and it's a weird sort of feeling, I imagine. So at the time you took your pledge, did you believe that it was actually going to be the best way to prevent pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases?
Well, abstinence is the only 100% effective way to prevent STIs and teen pregnancy. But, you know, I didn't realize at the time that 60% of American high school students have sex before they graduate.
Yeah.
So it was a tall order for anyone.
So saying you're going to be abstinent doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be.
That's correct, especially since a lot of teens today don't consider other types of sex besides intercourse actual sex, so they consider themselves virgins while putting themselves at risk.
So you're saying that they'll use the abstinence-only pledge to rationalize, in a sense, oral sex, anal sex, other things.
Right. They'll say, I'm still a virgin, but they won't have the education to know to use a condom when they do engage in those behaviors.
Mm.
Now, Shelby Knox, you took that pledge along with many others, but I'm wondering, it doesn't seem like the pledges worked out that well if you look at the teen pregnancy and STD rates in Lubbock. What's the disconnect here?
Well, the disconnect is that a lot of teens break the pledge, and when they do, they're 88% less likely to use any form of contraception when they do. So it's sort of a scare tactic. Don't have sex. If you do, you're a bad person. We're not telling you why. And then they just let them loose in a world which is telling teens that they need to be sexual.
Well, if they feel guilty about it, they're trying to honor the pledge. When they get to that moment where they can't control themselves, they're less likely to be prepared.
Right.
Yeah. So now tell me what happened. What made you snap and wake up to reality and actually find the courage to take these forces on? Because there's some big propaganda forces you're coming up against.
I started to realize that a lot of girls were getting pregnant. People were getting sexually transmitted infections. They had nowhere to go to get their questions answered about sex. And I realized it all boiled down to a lack of good sex education.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the actions you took?
I joined a group called the Lubbock Youth Commission. I became the spokesperson for that group. We started to speak to the school board and the city council about changing the curriculum. When they were reluctant to listen, we went to the media. We tried to get as much attention as possible. And we also all took courses to learn to teach sex education ourselves at the local health department.
Good for you.
All right. Now, Shelby, there's a pastor by the name of Ed Ainsworth who's prominent in the film The Education of Shelby Knox. You took the True Love Waits pledge with him. Why?
Because that's what you do when you're a young Southern Baptist girl. And at the time, I didn't realize that it was a scare tactic and something that didn't provide much sex education.
Now, does he have some level of influence in the state of Texas?
He has a lot of influence in the city of Lubbock. I know that most of the teens look to him as the spiritual advisor, you know, the local pastor. I know he travels around the state of Texas and across the nation giving his love, sex, and dating seminar. In fact, he's recently started traveling to Africa.
Hey, so Shelby, now, what was some, was there a backlash? Were you treated strangely by other fellow students, by your parents, by the religious community? What were you made to wear a scarlet A or anything?
I did face some opposition at church. Some people felt that they should tell me I was going to hell. I lost some friends over this who felt like it wasn't the place of a Christian young woman to be taking this stand. However, I had very supportive parents and very supportive friends who really stood behind me and gave me the strength to do what I did.
So when someone tells you you're going to go to hell, do they do it in a pleasant Christian way? How does that come off?
Oh, it's usually very sickly sweet. You know, I think you're on the path to hell, and I'd really like to help you with that.
Oh, wow. I'd like to get you off that path, if you could, and come back to the path of denial. So where does the fight go now, Shelby? Where are you at with this?
In Texas, the fight is at a state level. There's a Texas mandate that sex education must be an abstinence-only curriculum, and also states that any mention of condoms has to be in terms of failure rates. So we really need to start at the state level in Texas. On a national level, more and more money is being thrown at these abstinence-only programs and being matched by state funds. And the fact is that they've never been proven. At a national level, we need to have matching funds for a more comprehensive sex education program.
It's amazing to me because, you know, we've talked about this before on the show. It's like you were saying, is that there's a rationalization that's made by people who are abstinents, you know, to either have more risky sex without protection because they don't think they're going to, but everyone, you know, most people get to that point where they just, like, there might be a situation where you might have to have sex. So why not have a condom in your wallet? Why can't a teacher just say that we don't want you to be abstinent, but, you know, just in case, right?
Yeah, but a lot of people say that talking to teens about sex is going to incite them to have sex. But the truth is, teens are humans. They're naturally curious about sex. And their first education about it doesn't need to be their first sexual intercourse.
How old are you?
I'm 18.
Okay. So now, how's the response to the show been going? I mean, are you sort of celebrity now?
I certainly hope I'm not a celebrity. We've had an overwhelming response to the film. It's been traveling.
You hope you're not a celebrity?
I
Why
hope
not?
I'm not a celebrity.
Does that frighten you?
No, it doesn't frighten me, but once you get a celebrity status, I don't think that you could be an effective activist, and that's what I want to be for the rest of my life, is an effective activist.
Wow, that's noble, and I appreciate everything you're doing. I'm looking forward to seeing the show tonight, Shelby Knox. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Shelby.
You take care. Shelby Knox is going to be on the Education of Shelby Knox is tonight on PBS, and a lifelong activist. That is a noble desire for an 18-year-old woman to have.
Yeah, and she's in college. She can go. Hopefully she'll come out and change the world. You know what we've got coming up? The Liberal Confessional and much more.
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We will be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9. We'll have free coffee and tons of giveaways. We'll be joined by DMC from Run DMC and New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller will be there. We're going to have the regular cast of guys, little Lawton Smalls, little Milfington of some kind, perhaps a liberal aggressor from the Revolution. We'll be there. Who's to say? I will be performing in New Jersey, in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, this Saturday night at Bananas Comedy Club. For tickets, go to bananascomedyclub.com. Also, folks, very important. Did you go to summer camp? How was that for you? It was good, right? Changed your life, didn't it? Even, you know, you did some stuff there that maybe you're not proud of, but it certainly changed your life and you had a good time. You learned some things. We're raising money to send inner city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid from the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for a child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. Help out a little bit. Don't do what my mother did. Don't send it to me, care of Air America. Don't send me the checks. Go to the link on this site. for Camp Air America and find out what's going on with that there. For those of you who are just tuning into our show, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Libraries say law enforcement officials to make inquiries about what books people take out. When CIA officials were asked why they have made over 200 inquiries at libraries, they said, quote, "We don't trust librarians. Anyone whose job requires them to enforce a code of silence must be hiding something," end quote. Saddam Hussein's guards tell GQ magazine about some of the former dictator's quirks. Saddam greatly admired President Reagan, who, if he were still alive, would be happy to know he was able to reach the real heart of his fan base. Saddam would eat a family-sized bag of Doritos in 10 minutes, and before you know it, get the urge to guess 10,000 Kurds. You see, there's this, the Doritos kill the Kurds connection that a lot of people didn't know about. Hey, researchers say some response areas of the brain shut down during female orgasms. A woman's brain has to be deactivated for her to have an orgasm. A woman's brain has to be deactivated for her to have an orgasm. It's also very helpful for getting her into bed in the first place. Scientists found that when women genuinely achieved an orgasm, areas of the brain involved in fear and emotion were deactivated. So, guys, if she says afterwards, "I was so afraid and emotional during my orgasm," you got an actress on your hands. That's all I'm saying. Hello. How are you? Those are the Morning Sedition Cliff Notes for today. Oof. Yes, that's a true survey. Of course,
I know.
You would hope that. You would hope that everything would turn off. That's the big point of the orgasm. Is that you get that moment of like, why? and then everything goes away for a second, and your body is filled with the goodness.
I think you can actually, now you should be able to get a machine that can tell, you know, like if she's faking.
Yeah, but then what situation are you going to be in there? Okay, so you're having sex with your wife or your significant other or whoever, and you got electrodes hooked up to her, and you got her to a machine, and then right at the moment where she has an orgasm, if the buzzer's not going off, you're going to go, "Come on, baby, I'm working here.
Try harder."
Well, you know, sometimes you never know. Maybe that's what she should say. Right. That's, yeah. Instead of you, nothing should be said. You should just try harder.
Yeah.
And then if it still doesn't work, then you know that you're in it for she's in it for the wrong reason. Who knows what?
Yeah.
Who
exactly.
Knows? Are you uncomfortable after talking about this? You brought it up.
No, man. Right. I'm not uncomfortable with talking about it.
All right.
I just think a machine would be perfect.
So, Riley, you would strap your wife into a machine.
Huh?
Yeah.
No, man. Infrared. You don't have to strap her into a machine.
Oh, he's got
infrared. What is infrared, man? Just find out if that area of the brain is active.
That's a trusting relationship.
It's not a matter of trust.
I say that.
Sure it is.
No, it's not a matter of trust.
No, I would like
science.
To believe.
It's the interest of science.
I like to believe. I would like to believe that that my wife has not faked an orgasm. I've asked her before. I've had conversations about it. And she assures me that there are several different kinds of orgasms with different spectrums of feelings and emotions. Is she selling me a bill of goods? I don't think so. I just
you bought that?
I did. Not only did I buy it, I buy it every time. Every time I buy it.
My girlfriend has faked.
Hey, really?
Yes.
Just because she wanted out? She was, like, done? She was tired of looking at you crying?
She just wasn't going to get there.
So she faked it instead?
Yeah.
See, my wife never done that. She'll say it's not going to happen, and then I'll feel bad, but, you know, you go on with your life.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know what I mean? You go on with your day, not feeling as good as you could have. I'm not feeling like a conqueror, like a warrior.
Of course.
Somebody who's able
like
to do things. Yes, like, I've made this happen. But, you know, you feel a little less secure, and you say things like, "Wait, is it because, what else can I do?" You know,
those questions afterwards are terrible.
But, you know, but all I'm saying is, like, you know, not to get too crass and dirty in this conversation, you know when they do. You do.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Not Riley, apparently.
It's a group.
You want infrared.
Bam!
I want infrared.
Infrared.
I want proof.
So this is an interesting segue. Bill Clinton has become the most, has recently come out, in criticizing Guantanamo Bay detention center or gulag or however you want to characterize the torture unit of the American intelligence community there. He has said that that if it's not you know if it, he basically said that if it sounds so what did he basically what, say it Maron. He said, look, it needs to be fixed. Something needs to happen. Something needs to change. He's not saying whether they should close it down, but if they're not going to close it down, they should definitely clean it up, fix it, do something, make it work properly. Apparently, he was not able to criticize them for detaining terrorists or potential terrorists indefinitely because he has actually done that on his own watch.
Yeah.
But he says that he doesn't necessarily think that you should continue to hold people for years at a time if you can't accuse them of anything with proof.
Clean it up or close it down. That was his very simple message. And he says, if you don't do it, you've given terrorists a profound victory, end quote.
Is that, yes, that's what he said, exactly. So moving on, we have also that the Democrats have now stifled, tramped down, pushed back the nomination of John Bolton for UN ambassador to the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. This is ongoing. This is something that that now Bush says he will maybe just appoint Bolton in a constitutional power that is rarely used. He can just say, well, you know, screw you guys. I don't need the Senate. I don't need anyone to tell me what to do. I can put him in. Apparently, there's a sunset on that, that they can only do that for a year. But
you
nonetheless,
do it through January 07.
This shows a blatant disrespect for the government and the process of the government if he actually takes that action.
And what kind of credibility do people think that the rest of the nations that are part of the United Nations don't know how American policy works? Do they think that people won't know that John Bolton would be sitting in that office without the approval of the upper house of Congress? Do they think that other countries are going to give him any credibility whatsoever based on that? That's nuts.
That is nuts. This is an interesting unfolding in the tobacco case, the government's case against big tobacco, which got settled for a ridiculously small amount in comparison to what it was supposed to be settled for, $10 billion. $10 billion as opposed to the $130 billion the government initially asked for in order to create a five-year smoking cessation program for the nation has now been brought down to a one-year, $10 billion settlement, and the Justice Department wanted this. Surprised, it surprised big tobacco, and it surprised some of the people involved in the case who had been working on this for 6 years. Now, Max H. Bazerman, a Harvard Business School professor and government expert in the case against big tobacco, said that a top Justice Department official threatened him through a trial lawyer, through a career trial lawyer who was working on the behest of the government, threatened him to change his testimony. And he threatened him at the behest of Frank J. Marine, the litigation counsel, and Assistant Attorney General Robert D. McCallum Jr., who apparently was one of Bush's old cronies from the Skull and Bones Club.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, he's one of Bush's old cronies. And a person that worked with the tobacco industry.
But he was told, yes, he was told that he actually had to change what he was going to say about what I will share with you momentarily. Also, I want to get some calls about Joe Biden is seeking the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. Now, Joe Biden has his good points, but Joe Biden also has many bad points in certain respects. Joe Biden is he operates at the... He is basically the credit card company's hoe. Can I say that?
Sure you can.
As much as he has passion, charisma, and dedication to certain causes, you know, specifically, you know, treating soldiers properly in Iraq and managing the Iraq situation, this is a senator who led the fight to pass a bankruptcy bill, voted against limiting the interest credit card companies can gouge consumers with, voted against limiting predatory lending, voted against protecting consumers when their identity is stolen, voted for the Iraq war, and voted to confirm Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Also, he spoke out against Howard Dean the other day, which we don't like in general. What do you think of Joe Biden? 866-303-2270 is our number. I wish that this wasn't true, but this is a guy that is owned by the credit card industry, and I would like to know what you people think. And when we come back in just a few minutes, we'll finish up on this tobacco story. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Call us at 866.
Ha, that's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes, yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
800-357-1473. 800-357-1473. That's 800-357-1473.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I misspoke. I tried to wrap my brain around a story, didn't quite get it all together. Now, in this big tobacco case, they were bullying this witness to say something differently than he had planned to say. The witness wanted to say that the upper management of the tobacco companies needed to be monitored. The attorney from the Justice Department, at the behest of the Attorney General, said, could you switch that to not needing to be monitored? And also, it hasn't been settled. What they're asking for is $10 billion over 5 years for cessation programs for the nation, as opposed to $130 billion over 5 years. And
yes,
we clean that up. We're now taking calls about Joe Biden's desire to be the Democratic nomination for president in 2008. This is Joe Biden, who is really building his ideas around being not against the war, but more responsible around the war. But also, this is a guy that spearheaded the movement towards bankruptcy legislation, denying people the ability to file for bankruptcy. Also, he definitely supported the credit card's desire to make bankruptcy courts just collection agencies, which makes him not such a great guy. We're listening to what you have to say right now. Bob in Dallas, how are you, Bob?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys, I'm a regular listener. Appreciate the show, but I got to tell you, I grew up with Joe Biden. I went to Archmere Academy in Delaware with him, and you're dead wrong, and let me tell you why. There are 45,000 jobs from the credit card industry in Delaware. The entire state only has 600,000 people. He's got to protect them. He's always been the guy for the blue-collar guy because that's where he comes from, Irish Catholic, middle-class guy. Joe Biden will go to hell for the guy that he wants to protect, and that's what he had to do there. Call him what you want, but that's the truth. As an individual, this guy will stand up for what's right.
It's sort of a weird concession to make, though, in terms of, you know, bankruptcy legislation, which puts a lot of people, a lot of working people that you're talking about, a lot of blue-collar people, in a difficult situation if things go bad for them, and also allowing credit card industries to, you know, not put caps on these predatory lendings and these percentages that they can raise people's, you know, the amount of people interest that they'll have to pay. It just seems like it's a difficult line to straddle.
You just said it, Mark. It is a difficult line. Just listen to me for 10 seconds. You're a United States senator, and you represent 600,000 people. 45,000 of them work for these predators, and those predators will pick up and they'll leave your state in a heartbeat if you don't do their deal. What is he going to do? He's between a rock and a hard place.
Thanks for your call, Bob. Appreciate the information. It's a very difficult concession, and it's pirate politics that these guys have to straddle this stuff all the time. But I'm just wondering if you were to really look at the damage of possibly alienating the credit card companies and losing those jobs against the damage in the long term that this Republican-driven bankruptcy legislation is going to do to working people in the future. I'm not sure it evens out. Matt, listening in West Palm Beach.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How you doing?
What's going on, man?
I don't know. I feel about Joe Biden the same way I feel about John McCain. Like, I like some of the stuff he stands for, but I can't get my brain around the whole package.
Exactly.
And I think they should run together in 2008 and call it the What's the Deal with These Guys tour.
Maybe one will make up for the other shortcomings. Thanks for your call, Matt. I didn't mean to cut you off, Riley. What were you going to say about the straddling?
This is a bargain that virtually every politician, particularly those in the Senate, end up having to make. The caller's right. Biden represents a very small state. If there were 45,000 jobs, for example, in Michigan, that'd be an average GM layoff. But if 45,000 jobs out of a state of 600,000, it's a very
big
chunk.
Percentage.
And I think he may be right. They would probably, if Biden were to go in a different direction, they might move to another state.
Stuart in Hollywood, Florida. What's up, Stuart?
Hey, Stuart. How you doing? Listen, not only does Biden have the worst hair weave in the Senate, okay, but seriously, in 1988 when he tried to run for the presidency, you know, groups like what is now called the Swift Boat, I call them the Swift Boat Liars for perjury.
Sure.
He'll be all over him. He plagiarized some paper that he wrote in college, and he immediately withdrew, you know, like a coward, okay? And I got to tell you that a guy like this, he's like you said, for Condoleezza, whatever, he's Republican light. I don't want it. For me, I wish Howard Dean would get out of the DNC and run for president. He's the only one with balls except for Barbara Boxer.
Thanks, Stuart. Thanks a lot.
Good
observation. Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you really see how these politicians operate. I understand the position he's in, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, the shift from senator to whole country. Now he's got to sell the fact that he is the working guy's representative.
Yeah.
Without discussing, you know, bankruptcy legislation.
But see, what's going to happen, Mark, is that each and every Democrat who's going to seek the presidential nomination in 08 is going to come with their own individual baggage. Evan Bayh's going to have it from his time in Indiana. Mark Warner, if he decides to have it, his time in Virginia. Hillary Clinton, you know, cozying up to people like Bill Frist and Newt Gingrich. Each one of them is going to come to the table with something that progressives really don't like.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, man. You know what, Riley, I got to say goodbye to our callers here, and we're going to shift the call subject in a few minutes.
We're
going to have the liberal confessional here. We're also going to talk more about Biden, later in the show, I'm sure.
Yes.
We're going to talk more about the Saddam revelations later in the show, I'm sure. Who would have known that Saddam loved Cheetos until he was introduced to Doritos?
And Raisin Bran Crunch.
Do we really need that information? Get ready to confess your sins, folks. We got the liberal confessional coming up. We got Planet Bush coming up. We got your calls coming up. All that next here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark. It's 27 past the hour. Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Talking about and what's going on in the boggle sphere in general. Next time on Franken
on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. That's Run DMC. We'll be broadcasting live from the T Lounge in Park Slope with DMC.
Yeah.
He will come down to Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday, 6 to 9 at the T Lounge. We'll have free coffee and tons of giveaways. New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller. Mark and I are going to be there. As always, you can touch Mark Riley.
Hey!
Also, we will have Lawton Smalls, most likely, Brendan P.W. McDonald with the live intro to the iNews. Hopefully the liberal aggressor, the revolution.
Touch all of them.
Yeah.
Don't touch me.
He'll be there. It's always a good time. We've had some great live broadcasts.
Yeah, we really have.
Folks, it's summertime, and if you want to help out, we're raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350 sponsors 1 week of camp for a child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. Do not send it care of me at Air America Radio like my mother did. Though she did send $100. Very nice, Mom.
Yeah.
Very nice. That's going to really help out. Look, I haven't done these in a little while. First, I want to say I'm going to be at Bananas at Hasbrook Heights Comedy Club.
That's right.
Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights.
Now, when is that?
That's Saturday night, June 25th. A couple of shows. Go to bananascomedyclub.com. Check that out. See if you want to get some tickets for that. Last night I had a dream, and I'm going to share it with you because I used to do that a lot more, but I'm going to, though I don't do it that often, sometimes there's some serious meat to the dream. Ready? I go into the bathroom at like 2 in the morning. There's a bright red cow standing there dripping with blood and open sores and acid grinning insanely at me. In a voice just like Dick Cheney, it says, "Eat me, Mark. Eat my brain." And there's a fork sticking out of its skull. I yell, "No, go away, mad cow. You don't have FDA approval." And it chases me out of my house and into the street. While I'm running, my entire body starts to transform. I've got a head of lettuce. My hair was kale. Bok choy eyebrows. Black-eyed peas for eyes. Broccoli neck. Cauliflower ears. I cough up a handful of fennel. I look, down there. There's a carrot. Very disturbing. Also down there, fava beans. You know what I'm saying, all right? Enough said. Anyway, the mad cow chases me into an alley, which is full of hundreds of zombies. And I think they're about to kill me, but they go right for the cow and start ripping off hunks of flesh and stuffing it into their mouths. I scream, "No, you guys don't. You could get Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, a rare and fatal form of dementia whose symptoms include hallucinations, muscle twitching, delirium, profound confusion." I don't know how I know that. One of them says to me, "Dude, we're already zombies. What does it matter?" I said, "All right, good point." Everyone seems to be enjoying the beef, and even though it was disgusting, I felt left out somehow. So I slipped out of the alley and started eating one of my cauliflower ears. I could use some ranch dressing. I woke up and my bed was filled with cud.
Ooh,
cud! It's weird. I did have it. That's the most serious part of that dream, the most truest part, is I did dream that I had kale.
Kale?
Kale hair.
What about the...
It's weird. I had a weird dream. I just remembered it.
Is this a barbecue thing, man?
No, I just had... No, it's not a barbecue thing. It's because I eat too much kale.
Oh, okay.
And I literally went to comb my hair, and there was kale hair.
Ah.
But I just remembered some other dream where I was talking to somebody. Oh, what the hell was it? I was talking to somebody about my politics. It was in a dream, and I was basically saying, hey, look, once I got past the whole Jesus thing, once I just sort of, like, let that be and accepted it, I was much more able to understand politics.
You accepted Jesus?
In my dream, I accepted Jesus.
As?
I don't know what, but I don't remember being Christian in the dream per se.
Okay.
But I do remember saying, look, once you just realize that Jesus is real, you know, then you can move on with your conversation.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well,
what the hell is that about?
I think you need to get to a church.
And then I'm reading Nick Tosh's new book, King of the Jews,
uh-oh,
which I thought was about Arnold Rothstein. But it's about so much more, my friend.
Not Al Franken.
No, it's about, it's completely deconstructs the Jesus myth. It completely debunks and deconstructs the Bible.
Uh-oh.
And also it talks about Arnold Rothstein. It's a huge... You can't believe this book. I mean,
it talks about Arnold.
It does, and it goes in and out of streams of consciousness, not streams of consciousness, but fragments from, it seems like, his own life.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating book, and I'm a big Nick Tosh fan. Dino, the biography of Dean Martin, one of the best books ever written.
Okay.
So let's get into this. In her story, Tuesdays with Saddam, appearing in the July issue of GQ, correspondent Lisa DiPaolo, she'll be with us tomorrow, by the way, folks, interviews five U.S. soldiers who guarded and got to know Saddam Hussein. And I tell you, I was one of the few people that saw Saddam Hussein on the cover of the Post in his underpants and said, that's no good for anybody. You shouldn't do that to anybody, show a picture of them in their underpants, you know, in the media. It's just nasty. It doesn't matter if he was a tyrant or a dictator or the killer of his own people. He's in his underpants, you know, not that he deserves respect, but don't put him on the, whatever. That's not the issue. But now we've got all these details about his day-to-day existence, which humanizes him even more. Which I find annoying, but funny. I didn't want to look at Saddam as just sort of this weird, quirky old man.
Mm.
But now we are forced to assess him as such, as a man who loves to eat Raisin Bran Crunch for breakfast, but never Fruit Loops.
Yeah.
No, the colors make me uncomfortable. Too many colors. Very bad. Very bad. This color does not happen in nature. He apparently has a tattoo on his underside of his forearm of a four-legged animal that he got when he was like 8 or 9 years old. He traded 10 watermelons for the tattoo.
Wow.
Yeah. A little something about Saddam. What else you got there, Riley?
Well, he'd like to talk about the ladies and gave some advice. Because remember now, his guards were all from the Pennsylvania National Guard, all young guys between 19 and 25.
Yeah.
His advice to them, you got to find a good woman. Not too smart, not too dumb, not too old, not too young. In the middle. One that can cook and clean. You thank her, and you go, and then apparently he went like in a spanking motion.
Oh, so Saddam's a spanker, huh?
Yeah.
I just don't know how I feel about this. It's funny. It's endearing in a way, but it is Saddam Hussein.
Oh, yeah. You know the one part that's not so endearing? He says he knows who ratted him out in that hole he was stuck in. And my guess is if he goes back into power like he thinks, that will be the first person on his list.
Well, that's a long shot. He also says that he loved Doritos until he loved Cheetos until he tried
Doritos. Yeah.
And then he referred to them as Doris. And apparently he used to signal the guards with a little triangle in his hand. Doris, please.
Yeah.
I want some Doritos.
He also, apparently, according to this, doesn't use toilet paper. But that's a whole other discussion for another day.
Yeah, he's apparently very anal. And he's a clean freak. And keeps everything clean, and he washes his hands constantly, but doesn't use toilet paper for whatever reason, uses his hands and rinses it off.
Yeah.
This is Saddam Hussein, killer of Kurds and his own people.
Yeah.
Wait, how does that work?
I don't know. how much do you need to go into it? He uses his hands, and he washes his hands.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you want from me? I'm just reading off the sheet here, Chris. I mean, you want me to what? Go A, like?
I'm sorry. I just needed a little clarification.
You need steps? I imagine that after he's done making...
Does he then eat the Doritos, and then I can just see him just licking his fingers?
Why we gotta go there?
Doritos cheese on
them? Yeah, but he washes his hands. You know,
he washes his hands.
So you know what? Somewhere we're making a five-year-old very happy.
Yeah.
They're talking about poopy. As opposed to alienating the kids, now we're making the kids happy.
Yeah.
In the cars with their parents, talking about poop and Doritos. All right?
That's
wow. I'm a five-year-old, my friend.
I'm just trying to make it clear to the parents that might be judging us for our lack of content on a political level that right now saying poopy is making the kids happy. That's all I'm saying. If the kid is under five, and maybe even some adults enjoy the poop, too. They enjoy it when you say poop. Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal, Riley.
Oh, no.
We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn, Riley. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Oh, well, look, I'm feeling a little guilty because, well, look, it's been getting hot lately, and I'm tired of being all sticky in my apartment, Riley. Summer in this city can be disgusting, you know what I'm saying?
So what did you do, Mark? Did you open a window? Did you turn on a fan? Did you buy a lemon ice from a Puerto Rican guy on the corner?
I've done all that, Riley. They're temporary fixes, my friend. You know what I did? I went out and bought one.
And an air conditioner, Mark?
Yes, I did. And it's deliciously cool in my apartment now. Amazing. And there's a white noise that drowns out the whole hot world outside of my window. It's wonderful,
Mark.
Man. Yes, sir.
Do I have to tell you about fluorocarbons?
No.
Do I have to tell you how air conditioners eat holes in the ozone?
No.
Do I have to tell you about global warming?
No, you just warming? Did anyways. I just heard it. And yeah, my friend, I'm guilty. All right? But air conditioners are probably the greatest invention ever.
So you're going to condemn the next generation to increased skin cancer, suppressed immune systems, and lower plant growth just so you can get a little cooler?
Well, actually, it's a lot cooler. All right? And you got to remember, global warming is making it a lot hotter outside, too.
You are kind of clinging on to this one, aren't you, Mark? I have your penance.
All right, hit me, Brother Riley. But please, please, don't make me get rid of it. All right? It is a love I haven't felt in a long time, my friend.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Okay. I'm going to make a deal with you.
All right.
You can keep your air conditioner.
Yes.
But don't abuse it. Turn it off when you don't need it.
That's it?
No, 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 no. You have to go to the Bronx and find a family with a child who has asthma and buy them an air conditioner, too. And not one of those cheap-ass $99 air conditioners either. Get them a good one, the kind with a HEPA filter.
All right, okay, I can do that. And then I'll also send some kids to camp. But really, I mean, look, you've got an air conditioner, too, don't you?
Yo, this is your confessional, smartass, not mine. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. I feel better. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess, you can seek absolution in our liberal confessional at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. We've got a call addressing a previous topic here. Joe, how are you, Joe?
Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Hello, Joe.
Hey,
what's
I got
up?
So many sins, I'm not going to get into them right now. But the only reason I was calling, and I figured other callers are going to call about this too, what Saddam Hussein does with his left hand is common, I'm told, in the Arab world.
Okay. Okay.
Ah.
So then we shouldn't make fun of him for that.
Well, no, you can make fun of him if you want. It's just not that big a deal. I figured you guys are so staggeringly intelligent you would have known, but I didn't hear you get into it, so...
Why do you got to hurt us, Joe? I mean, you know, you call us with some good information, but you got to take a shot on the way out?
I don't know. I just said you guys were smart.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry I'm being sensitive. I took it as a... But, Joe, I appreciate that information.
So it is...
Wait, am I wrong, or did he just go, since you guys are so staggering intelligent, maybe...
We figured you would have known that.
Are you telling me there wasn't a little twist of the knife there? Am I wrong, Chris? Did you hear a little of that?
No, I definitely heard a little, a little jab.
That, yeah, okay, all right. And then all of a sudden I say, what do you got to take? He says, hey, I'm helping out. Well, look, Joe, why don't you go wipe your butt with your hand?
Oh,
if you got a confession, 866-303-2270. Okay, but apparently it's not uncommon for people
you're
in that
right,
world.
You're right, Joe. You're right.
Yeah, and I knew that.
Yeah, me too.
No,
I just didn't say it. Yeah,
that's it. 46 past the hour. Call us with your confessions.
Morning. Call me, please.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
It's all our fault.
Call us at 866-303-2270.
Yeah, whatever.
That's 866-303-2270.
It's going to be fun.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Enjoy.
Details on the 90-day trial guarantee. Call 1-877-289-9200. That's 1-877-289-9200.
Yeah, that's right. We're deep in the... 50 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Edition. It's amazing what people get worked up over and call about. But now we're in some sort of, you know, we've been told that Saddam Hussein, in the new GQ article, who the author of we're going to have on the show tomorrow, about the five guys who have been watching Saddam, guarding him, and watching his behavior, is very humanizing. And one of the thing is, whether you want him to be human or not, this article will. His idiosyncrasies and his behavior just makes him seem like a sort of eccentric, you know, kind of anal compulsive old man. But apparently he wipes with his hand.
Yeah.
And then we were told by somebody that's not unusual for that culture to wipe with their hand. Now, of course, the hand poop issue has become very... Now it's people want to pipe in. They have things to say. Nina in Queens, can you help us out with the hand poop issue?
Yeah, hi. First of all, I'm not a member of his tribe, but I did learn from secondhand, friends who were in Nepal.
Would that be a dirty hand?
No. It's good friend's hand. But anyway, first I have to tell you you're fabulous. I listen to you every morning. I love you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyway, in those types of countries, people don't use utensils, and they eat from communal bowls.
Well, so that means that makes perfect sense, then, that they wouldn't, you know, wipe with toilet paper, because you're going to be eating anyways, and if you can just get everything going the same direction, what does that mean?
Well, so what happens is that the left hand is designated as the cleansing hand. And the right hand is designated as the eating hand. And one does not mix hands in bowls.
Okay.
So if you come across somebody with a missing left hand in that part of the world, then you can pretty much assume that they used their hands for the wrong activity.
Well, I mean, they've only got a couple of choices, don't they? I mean,
yeah.
One of them could be use toilet paper and eat with that hand.
I totally agree with you, being a civilized individual.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, what?
Wait a second. Nina, why do they use their left hand to wipe their butt?
I guess that they're taught, since they don't have toilet paper, that one hand is for cleaning their tush and the other one is for consuming their food.
They don't have toilet paper.
You can get toilet paper, I think.
Maybe not in Nepal. I don't know.
Oh, really? There's a sanction?
Shortage.
There are planes that can bring them toilet paper.
Yeah.
Well, massive amounts.
This is a bigger issue.
Maybe they need to call George Bush. Ask him for you know, a ton of toilet paper.
Well, I think we should just send them open to hand wipe their butts for them.
Absolutely, I agree.
Thank you, Nina.
With you.
I'm very happy we had this conversation. You take care.
Well, at least the guy used a hose.
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, what if you're eating fast and you get confused? You're like, why do we have to do this? Why are we up to our neck in caca right now?
It's interesting, my friend.
Oh, is that what it is?
If you're six. But I understand. No, I think it is interesting. And I didn't know it, and I've learned something new today. Can we get back to the confessions?
Sure.
Tommy, how have you sinned, Tommy? Do you want to share it with Brother Riley and myself?
Hi, Tommy.
Hi. Yeah, what happened was that we had an election for a new union boss,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the membership was upset with the old union boss because of concessions that they made during the last negotiations.
Uh-huh.
So they had an election, and the new guy won, but I just found out that he's a Republican, which means we're screwed next time we have a union contract coming up in a few years.
So you voted for the Republican?
I never voted for Republicans before.
And you knew you were going to be screwed?
No, I didn't know he was a Republican, but my ignorance is no defense because I should have found that out.
Oh, my God.
Is this building trade stuff?
I'm sorry?
Is this building trades, one of the building trade unions? Steel guy?
No, this is government.
No.
Oh, government. Oh.
All right, so you feel pretty bad about this.
Yeah, I feel terrible.
I don't know. It's a pretty big transgression. I think that you're going to have to go out and find Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh.
Well, he's under the 50-yard line at the giant stadium in the Playboy interview back in, you know, I think in the 80s. So.
All right, well, get a shovel. We want a skull. Thanks for calling, Tommy.
Let us know how you're progressing, Tommy.
Okay, here we go. Sultana, listening in New Jersey. Good morning. What is your sin, Sultana?
Hi. Good morning. Mm. I love your show.
Thank you.
I have this thing where I absolutely adore designer shoes and handbags, and my friends, especially my friend Greg Pickett in Boston, he's always lecturing me about the whole sweatshop
thing. I'm sure he appreciates the plug.
Yeah, really.
I'm sure he does.
Is he listening?
Yes, he listens every day. He's the one who told me about the station.
Okay. Thank you, Greg.
But, like, you know, he's like, oh, there's probably some six-year-old, you know, making that handbag for you. And, you know, and I say, okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. But then I see them, and they're so beautiful. I just can't. I can't stop.
So you just sort of rationalize and say, you know, how, you know, they make such pretty things, even though they're six and they don't get paid a nickel a week and they work 18 hours a day. It's worth it because it's
so pretty. No, I can't even say that I rationalize it in that way. It's just, I feel guilty.
Yeah,
I wear them.
I think you should feel guilty. Do you also buy Nike shoes and whatever else it is made at sweatshops? You're covered with exploited children karma, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Oh my God!
Wow.
Well, can you stay on the phone for a bit, and we'll get your penance in a minute.
Yes, thank you.
I wish, because I'm going to have to think about this one. This might require some time. Thank you. Sultana is like, a lot of people do that, though. You know, we all have to confess. If you were to really track down where and what you wear comes from, you would be amazed at just, you know, what you would find out and how horrible it is.
You mean my comfortable shoes are made by somebody?
You know they are, Riley. Sultana, we're going to get your penance in a minute for go ahead and buying that purse, even though six-year-olds made it for a nickel and no health coverage.
And
no,
guess what else is
probably
coming?
Not even a piece to live, place to live. What?
Planet Bush.
Of course. So we got a confession penance coming up. We got Planet Bush coming up. And we're going to talk about unionizing Starbucks. Dig that.
Yeah.
Six past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's my buddy Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're here on Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. We're finishing up our liberal confession segment. We have Sultana on the line, who has confessed to us that even despite her friend, what's your friend's name, Sultana?
Greg Pickett.
Greg Pickett up in Boston, who recommended our show to her, which is why we're plugging Greg Pickett. Good morning, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Despite his telling her that the purses that she likes to buy are probably made by exploited children in third world countries, you know, working for a nickel a day, you know, maybe if that, with living in a hut, you know, no health coverage, but Sultana says they're just the purses are so nice.
You guys are really making me feel like a piece of crap right now.
Well, here's your penance. We can help that. How does this strike you? Hear me out. Here's the pitch. The Sultana purse, okay? The Sultana purse is made by you, Sultana, at your house. You have to produce about 15 a day for a week of these purses. So get a sewing machine. Start designing. 15 a day, and you can only sell them for $2 a piece.
What do you think? And the name alone will sell them.
I
see where you're going with this. You're pretty much making me be a sweatshop worker.
Wow, yes. That's exactly right.
Giving me a dose of my own medicine.
Exactly. How do you feel about it? I expect to give my wife a Sultana purse
that's right.
for the holidays this winter, so get to work.
I'll be at the tea lounge, but I don't know that I'll have a purse completed by then.
I would like to see a design at the tea lounge.
Yeah, a design. Blueprint.
We'll see you there with the design package.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Sultana. Take care. I don't think she's going to do it. I don't think she's going to bring it.
We're
going to
have one person at the tea lounge, though.
Yeah, well, one person who's mad at us for making her feel guilty. Hey, so, no, she's not mad at us. And her buddy Greg is excited to have been recognized nationally. Here we go. We'll be broadcasting. She brought it up. Sultana did from the tea lounge. Our guest will be Sultana with her purse design in Parks Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9. We're going to have some free coffee. We're going to have a lot of giveaways. We're going to be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame. Yeah. New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller is going to be there. There's an explanation point on my sheet. Gifford Miller, people.
Yeah.
Come on. I think people are going to be flying in for Gifford Miller. Am I wrong? I'm looking forward to meeting Gifford Miller.
I've met him before.
You have?
Absolutely.
Come on, sound more excited. It's Gifford Miller. Wake up, folks.
Woo! Yeah.
He's running for mayor, Gifford Miller.
Okay.
Against the mighty Bloomberg.
Against the mighty Bloomberg.
So come by and say hello. Touch Mark Riley. Meet Lawton Smalls. Meet the Milfington fellas. Meet you can meet Dan Pashman. I just did a Cardinal Milvington. P.W. McDonald will be doing the live intro and outro for the iNews 5000, which makes people very happy.
Yes.
So, dude, I'll be at Bananas Saturday in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. Go to Bananas. What is it? BananasComedyClub.com if you want to come see me. I think I'll be pretty funny. All right, here we go. So let's talk about the reopening of this 1964 civil rights swing, the case of the civil rights swing of Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Schwerner.
Yeah.
Is now deadlocked at 6-6. And we thought this guy, Edgar Ray Killen, was going to go. We thought we had a sealed case here.
A lot of people in Mississippi who actually were the catalysts for bringing this case thought it would be pretty much, as George Tenet once described, weapons of mass destruction, a slam dunk. It is obviously not. Now, the six to six preliminary vote is just that. It is a vote after a day's worth of deliberations. It does not mean a hung jury. It does not mean they're not going to be deliberating. In fact, they're going to be deliberating again today. There's some people who say that the judge should not have let the jury go home over the weekend because they're going to hear. This is one of those places, Mark, the whole county's only got 28,000 people.
And some people think that the judge shouldn't have said, see what trouble you cause when outsiders are let in?
See, that's the thing where you think that progress has been made in a lot of areas.
He didn't really say that.
I know, but the thing is, there are people that are saying just that.
They're saying this is about
outsiders.
Are they really saying that?
Yes.
That's unbelievable. And there are people that are saying that the Klans, they're like the Rotary Club. They've done a lot of good here.
Well, you know,
helped out the community.
Somebody actually testified to that. A defense witness said that in open court in Mississippi. This is a situation where everybody seems to know everybody else. Everybody has relationships with everybody else, including the defendant, Edgar Ray Killen, who I hope, I don't like to hope that anyone gets locked up for the rest of their natural lives, but in this case, I'm going to say it. I hope he goes.
Yeah, I mean, he should die in jail. Look, the Democrats blocked another attempt to confirm John Bolton as U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Monday, this was, and
yeah.
Bush, the leader of the neocon death cult, says he might install him during the Senate's July recess without the Senate's approval. I didn't even realize he could just do that. He could just say, I'm putting him in. To hell with you guys. If he did that, this is a constitutional power that he's allowed to do this if he wants. It's not... The appointment only lasts a year, and I guess after that year, what, they have to vote anyways?
Yeah, I mean, then it goes back to square one again because it'll be a new Congress.
But see, this guy, if he does this, has no respect for government and is just being the fascist sort of dictator that we assume he is on some level. That, you know, on some level, he has no respect for the process of government. He and his pals, the neocon death cult, only look at the government as a way to facilitate making money for their friends and their corporate backers.
Yes.
And if he did this, this would be a blatant slap in the face to whatever's left of American democracy, which is very little.
Well, the United States seems to want the United Nations to become a rubber stamp for American foreign policy. We saw that in the run-up to the war when they went to the United Nations and attempted to bully the member nations. There are a whole bunch of issues that are going on at the United Nations right now, and one of the things that Bolton would be the point person on is either reforming the United Nations, as they put it, or the U.S. won't pay their dues.
Yeah, he's his type of reforming would be just complete bully tactics, just smacking people around. It's not what the United Nations was set up to do, but this administration has absolutely no respect for the United Nations in any way.
No, they don't. And in fact, Bolton has said, as you very correctly pointed out a little earlier, Mark, that 10 floors off the UN building here in New York, no difference.
Porter Goss says he has an excellent idea. This is new CIA director Porter Goss, quote-unquote, an excellent idea, quote, excellent idea, unquote, where Osama bin Laden is hiding, but the U.S., United States' respect for sovereign nations makes it more difficult to capture him. And this is a quote, Porter Goss, quote, when you go to the question of dealing with sanctuaries and sovereign states, you're dealing with a problem of our sense of international obligation, fair play, unquote. Like this particular administration has any respect for fair play in terms of international politics. Now, I think this is basically Porter Goss saying, hey, fellas, come on, remember me? You put me in charge over here. Let me sit at the grown-up table. Let me in. Let me go to the briefings. Because I think he feels that John Negroponte, who is,
National Intelligence Director.
National Intelligence Director, S. Honduran Death Squad organizer, has said that, he's the only guy that gets to brief the president on intelligence matters. And I think Porter Goss is feeling a little left out. So he's going, I know where he is. I know where Bin Laden is.
Yeah, but he won't share
with
anybody.
like Negro Pony says, yeah, I know where he is too. Thanks for sharing. Anyways, here we go. So when we come back, or you know, in just a few minutes, as we continue our show, we're going to have Planet Bush. We're going to have Lawton Smalls giving us a call. We're also going to talk to a couple of people, Starbucks employees, who Daniel Gross, one person who is working to unionize Starbucks employees. He's going to talk about the difficulties he's faced in forming the union and also what it's like working at Starbucks and why they're so glazed over, why there's sort of a weird kind of culty feel to the Starbucks folks. And he's bringing someone with him who had some trouble with the union that he's working to create. We're also going to send Dan Pashman out, I think. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, is going to go down to Starbucks to check out the situation. All that's coming up next, so stay with us. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. It's 14 past the hour.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah. They're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
And so call us right now. 800-430-9571. 800-430-9571.
Nineteen past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Hey, look, folks, we're raising money to send inner kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors 1 week of camp for an entire child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. Don't send it to me, Care of Air America, like my mother did. They'll thank you, Mom, for the $100. I'll try and get that to the right place.
There you go.
I'm not going to buy myself a shirt with that. I'm going to send it on along to send a kid to camp.
Because
my mom said to send it. Usually I get checks from my mom. It's for my birthday.
Well, we've been getting a good response from your mom and from others to the camp appeal.
Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now here again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a memo for you.
Oh, yeah, I'll get right on that one. So I guess you're getting a little worried about the Downing Street memo, huh?
Never heard of it. I guess I didn't get the memo.
Yes, you have to have heard of it, my friend. That's the leaked memo from the British intelligence that says the Bush administration planned to launch a war in Iraq and then rigged a case to justify it. Heard of it now, mister?
Well, yes, of course, Mark. I've heard of it.
Okay.
But it's just more polite to try to avoid unpleasant subjects whenever possible.
Well, yeah, of course.
No one ever taught you that. I can just imagine your upbringing. Go ahead, Mark. Just stick your little arm right in that hornet's nest and see what happens.
I think you just just take a shot at my parents? I think you did. You're the one in the hornet's nest this time, Watton. The Downing Street memo's got teeth, my friend.
You know, old Jimmy Sensenbrenner had the right idea. When y'all start talking crazy, he just kicked y'all out of the Capitol and turned off your mic.
Oh, man.
Kind of hard to get your message out that way, isn't it? Hey, speak up, liberal. I can't hear you.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Listen,
no mics?
Listen to this. Yeah, it's hilarious. Hilarious. Listen to this, my friend. From Britain's intelligence chief, quote, Bush wanted to remove Saddam through military action justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction, but the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy, end quote.
Ooh, very dramatic, Mr. Lloyd Webber. I'm glad you brought your civics homework, Mark.
All right.
Because I brought a few documents of my own.
I can't wait.
I have here in my hand a copy of the Peachtree Street Memo.
The Peachtree Street Memo. What's that
one? Yes, that's a highly classified document leaked to me, Lawton Smalls, that proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that Hillary Clinton and Barbara Boxer participated in a plot to bulldoze all of America's churches and build huge ecstasy discos for lesbian on-demand abortionists. I got it.
Oh, yeah. That's really the same.
A memo.
That's the important Peachtree Street Memo.
Okay, here's another one.
Oh,
I also
come
have
on.
The explosive Ronald Reagan cul-de-sac memo here in my hand.
Where's that?
That's the street I live on, Mark.
Oh, all right.
And this memo says that Howard Dean and Osama bin Laden teamed up to sell half of all the marijuana peddled in America's elementary schools.
Come on,
it's
man.
A cartel. A big chunk of that money goes right here to Air America Radio.
Oh, stop
your
it.
Salary, Mark Merritt.
Oh, come on.
Paid from poison stone children.
No, Lawton, you made
stone
up.
Children pay your bills.
You made up both of those memos, didn't you, Lawton? You just made them up.
Yes, I did. And so did those folks with their data
no.
Street memo.
No, they didn't.
Same thing. All you need is some stationery and a PC and just talk like it's the truth, and boom, you got yourself a smoking gun.
Oh,
well,
come
sorry,
on. Come on.
Your pistol's made out of black licorice.
My friend, this story's gaining serious traction, Lawton. You can't just wish it away. We're coming to a tipping point, and soon, buddy.
Oh, thank you, Malcolm Gladwell.
All right.
But it's going to be you that's tipping over, buddy, not George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush. The Democrats are the leaning tower of Pisa right now, and you are chained to the back end of my pickup truck. We'll see who's got traction.
Hey, buddy, listen to me, Mr. Smalls. Bush could be impeached over this, Lawton. This memo's going to haunt him for the rest of his term, just like Nixon, another corrupt Republican going down from his own arrogance. You know it's going to happen, and you're not going to be able to spin your way out of it. Just like Watergate, Lawton. Just like Watergate, my friend.
Don't say
Watergate. Yeah, all right.
Don't say that word.
Go ahead and cry, you little baby.
Me and the neighborhood kids would gather in the backyard and play Watergate.
Oh, no.
I always wanted to be Haldeman or G. Gordon Liddy or Ehrlichman or one of the cool guys. But then make me be Dean.
No.
I was so sad when Nixon resigned.
Oh, God.
That same thing is going to happen to Bush one of these days. I know it. Bush is 10 times worse than Nixon. 10 times worse?
Okay.
Richard Nixon was a freaking saint compared to him.
Okay, buddy. Take it easy. Take it easy, man. All right, I understand. Wait, Watergate when he was a kid.
I was I bet you played.
I didn't play it.
You were Sirico, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Pull it together, man. Pull it together, buddy. Oh, my God. What is this, alien? All right.
It's not alien.
You all right?
Anybody can have a memo.
No.
Here's a memo from me to you, Mark. Stop your obstructionist whining and get on board the search train, pal.
Oh,
it's pulling away without you.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you. Deal with it.
No.
Please.
All right, I'm trying. I'm a dream, you know. So, look, that was always interesting to talk to Lawton there. We're going to talk to Starbucks employee Daniel Gross, who is working to unionize Starbucks employees. But before we get into that, why don't we take this quick call here from Marcus in Los Angeles. No, the other one.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Dan Pashman is down in Starbucks right now. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, hey, guys, how are you?
Are you trying to unionize the Starbucks people?
Yeah, I'm down here at Starbucks in the lobby, and there's a nice woman here. Can I actually order a small iced coffee, please? And also, I want to know, do you guys have a union here at Starbucks? Is there an employee union?
Yeah. What is she saying, Dan?
You guys, she's pretty sure, there's no union.
But she's not clear with
you. I think that's allowed to unionize, but they're not sure. They said they don't have a union.
Oh. So what? So she doesn't know whether there's a union?
They're not allowed to comment on any questions about the union.
Really?
Would you be interested in starting one up? Like, you
is that a gag rule?
Your health insurance or something?
What?
They said they get really good health insurance. It was my understanding that you have to work a really large number of hours, though, to be able to get it. That's not true?
What
right.
is she saying?
They're saying they refuse to comment.
Speak to my supervisor.
And also, my small coffee costs $2.17.
Where's that money going? That's
health
the big question. Where's that money going? So they're not allowed to comment on the union. They're not allowed to say anything but tall, grande, room for milk with that? Is that the deal?
I'm refusing to use their newspeak. I call it a small.
All right. I'm the same way. We're going to talk to Starbucks employee Daniel Gross, who is working to unionize Starbucks employees after this, and also with one of another employee of Starbucks had some trouble with Starbucks. They're both coming in after this. So stay with us, because that's coming up next here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. love your show, and I love your attitude.
I'm going to start charging.
Randy Rhodes on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
How you doing? I can't hear myself in my head. There I am.
There you are.
What do you know? Hey, Dan Passman was just downstairs in the Starbucks, and the Starbucks employee refused to talk about any questions. He asked her a couple questions about the union organizing, health benefits, and she might have been busy, granted, but she actually said we are not allowed to address any of those questions. Our next guests worked at Starbucks. Our first guest here, he worked at the Starbucks on Madison 36th Street. He's the grandson of a truck-driving Teamster, so he did what came naturally. He organized a union for his fellow Starbucks employees. Please welcome Daniel Gross to the show, and he's joined by Sarah Bender, who worked at the 1st Avenue and 17th Street Starbucks until she was fired for organizing a union. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Good to be here, Mark. Thanks.
So, Daniel, what are some of the problems you see at Starbucks as an employee? Because, you know, you walk in the place, and you would think you were at some sort of, cult operation. People are so pleasant. They're chipper. The guy downstairs here is way too friendly. It's really creepy. So, obviously, that's just a farce, right?
Yes, I was actually pleased to see your non-Starbucks coffee cup here, Mark.
Yeah. I try to cut back on it. You know, occasionally I surrender to it.
Well, we all have our flaws. Well, Chairman Howard Schultz and Starbucks are perpetuating one of the greatest con games in corporate America today when it comes to their labor practices. The reality of it is so far removed from the socially responsible image that Starbucks has constructed, it's staggering.
Yeah, like what?
First of all, every Starbucks worker on the retail level is a part-time worker, which means we're not guaranteed any number of hours per week.
So the same as McDonald's, basically.
I wouldn't be surprised. Same as McDonald's. We understand worse than Walmart. Even Walmart has some employees that have guaranteed hours.
Well, that's how they stop from giving health benefits, is by not giving anyone full-time status.
Yeah, the health benefits are tied into the part-time status. Starbucks, myth number two, if you will, we extend health care benefits to all our workers. Couldn't be farther from the truth. The truth is, to qualify to purchase health care, you need 240 hours of work per quarter. Now, it might not sound like a lot, but keep in mind, without the guaranteed number of hours,
right,
it can be difficult to qualify for the 240. Now, once you qualify, you still have to purchase the health care. And to purchase a plan without a ridiculously high deductible, it's just not going to be possible on a Starbucks wage. Hmm. You know, here in New York, after pressure from the union, Starbucks finally bumped up the wage to $8.25 an hour. And we're pleased about that achievement, but, you know, we're sure to point out that we're not at a living wage. And New York is at the highest end of the Starbucks wage spectrum. Other areas in the country are as low as the high fives, the six, the sevens.
Really? Now, you know, when workers historically have been confronted with wages that cannot allow them to feed their families, their response has been, at least since the 1930s, is to join or form a union. You tried to do that. How did Starbucks react when they heard you were doing it?
Yeah, well, we're actually still working on it right now. Sarah Bender, unfortunately, was fired for union activity, but I am still working at the 36 in Madison Starbucks. We reacted by organizing and coming together. And the remarkable thing about our union is we looked at the retail sector and saw the paucity of union density, and we realized that you can blame a lot of things for the lack of unions in this country, globalization, the Republican Party, what have you. But the bottom line is unions weren't reaching out to retail workers. Well, the industrial workers of the world are changing that. We've embraced what we call the solidarity unionism model, whereby any Starbucks worker anywhere can join the union without respect to the lack of a majority or presence of a majority in any given store.
We're talking to Daniel Gross, who has reached out to unionize his fellow Starbucks employees, and he's also joined here by Sarah Bender, who worked at another Starbucks store. And Sarah, you had some problems when you, you tried to unionize your fellow employees.
Yeah, I guess I'd say that I'm currently unemployed.
What was the who? How does that come down the chain? I mean, who talked to you? What were the chain of events that happened to your leading up to you getting fired?
Well, to just be on the record, I've never once been confronted with the word union by any of my management. It's all kind of been behind closed doors.
But when you talk to other employees, you talk about union.
Yeah. So I started working for Starbucks early September. And, you know, just got to know my employees like normal people and found out pretty quickly that this company wasn't all it was cracked up to be. So I started talking union and actually had a party, a Halloween party, in which Daniel was identified. And word leaked through the chain of command. There was, like, district managers were interrogating some people that were at the party. They identified me as a friend of the union. And then pretty much since then, they've been interrogating my coworkers. They threatened one person twice with a – actually, they threatened to not promote him if he participated in the union, and then since I've gotten fired, actually threatened to fire him if he continued participating with the union. And then they basically did what's pretty common with union campaigns, which is they packed my file, finding very, like, small technicalities to give me write-ups on, which they wouldn't write up other employees on, let's just say.
So they're bullying you out.
Yeah. They cut my hours pretty hard. I was in, like, 10 hours a week.
Wow.
All opening shifts. I'd be waking up at, you know, like, 4:45 in the morning to go in for a four-hour shift multiple times during the week.
And wearing you down.
Yeah. I'd say that. It was definitely the most oppressive atmosphere I've ever worked in before, and I've worked a lot of crappy jobs. And then kind of union activity surfaced in our district, and I think my manager – you know, she was feeling the pressure from her managers to get me out of there because this is her job. Her promotions are riding on the fact that she busts the union. So when union activity surfaced there, they're thinking, oh, okay, so Sarah must be planning something now. There must be something going on. Let's get her out. One of my coworkers overheard her talking to my district manager 3 days before I was fired, saying how she wanted to fire me for bothering people about the union, something like that. 3 days later, there was mysteriously $6 missing from my drop bag, which – my manager was in charge of counting that, and just let, like, it's, it was
$1.
You
got cut up? Over $6?
$6.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, but these tactics, it's like, I'm a little shocked. I know Starbucks is bad, and I know they're putting too much of something in the coffee because I start, you know, you get itchy for it. There's something wrong with it. But nonetheless, that's besides the point. This is the kind of tactics. McDonald's does this. I know a lot of the other fast food franchises, but you didn't expect it because, as you said, Starbucks presents themselves to us as some sort of all-encompassing, tremendously socially progressive organization. Now, was there ever a time where they said that maybe you would be manager if you stop your unionizing?
No, but because I am a really hard worker, everyone wanted me to promote it to shift supervisor just to kind of show, like, the fact that I wasn't fired for legit reasons. I myself, they knew that I was pretty dedicated to the union cause and that I wouldn't be swayed by, you know, pennies, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you began to talk to workers, the both of you, about belonging to the union, what was their initial response? I mean, were they down with it? Did they have a problem with it?
Well, there's widespread discontent among Starbucks workers because of the poverty wage, because of the ergonomic problems, because of the epidemic of repetitive strain injuries. So the challenge really is not appealing to workers' sense of justice and sense of what's right. We know what's right. The real hurdle is overcoming the quite vicious anti-union campaign. Actually, we did have to file charges against Starbucks because of threats, bribery, creating an impression of surveillance, and a whole host of other things.
Creating an impression of surveillance, what's that?
Yeah. Meaning you'd have a conversation, you'd pass out a union flyer, and no one would be around, but then that night, a senior official would come from the headquarters and sit you down and discipline you, meaning they're watching us on the cameras.
Wow. This is Starbucks. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I shouldn't be surprised because it's a corporation that's gotten everyone addicted to the go juice. I understand that. But nonetheless, it's so contrary to what they present. And some people at Starbucks, you walk in, as I said before, and you'd think that they were, like, in paradise the way they behave at the cash register. What's that about? Obviously, it's not about them treating employees so well. Are you told to act like some sort of fanatical Starbucks person? Or?
That's the legendary service that you're talking about.
But how do they program people?
Well, we read hundreds of pages of training manuals and are bribed with things called mug awards, basically to put on a front that we really enjoy working at Starbucks. We think Starbucks is great, and therefore we can sell more coffee and other overpriced beverages from the company.
You said that there have been some concessions made by Starbucks for the union, so you're having some success with this.
Yeah,
is that true?
Absolutely. We are proud of our achievements thus far. I mentioned the across-the-board wage increase, still far from a living wage, but nonetheless, more money ending up in workers' pockets. We also finally compelled Starbucks to concede that the physical layout of their shop, coupled with the systemic understaffing, has created the repetitive strain injury problem, like carpal tunnel syndrome that results from serving hundreds of drinks at lightning speeds. In their safety and security bulletin and their new employee manual, they now admit that the espresso bar is a problem area for repetitive strain, and they offer some exercises to deal with those issues. Now, once again, we're so far from a solution. It's kind of like an addict. We pushed them out of the denial phase, but the real solution is a comprehensive ergonomic overhaul of the workplace and stopping the understaffing.
Hmm. You know, I'm wondering what happens if you get the union and you're able to organize these workers, and then you get ready to try and sit down and work out a collective bargaining agreement, and they won't come to the table, which is a tactic that a lot of companies use when people start to organize. What do you do then?
Absolutely. That's why we use a direct action approach. That's why we're not going to depend on any labor law provisions, because as Human Rights Watch has pointed out, the United States labor law regime is deficient in several respects from international standards. So we put on pressure directly. We have pickets. We go to the community. We have workers on the shop floor that will stick together. You know, actually just yesterday, or 2 days ago rather, we had a demonstration in front of the 9th Street and 2nd Avenue Starbucks, which is now the second Starbucks that publicly has union members in it. And we had a rally outside, and they sent home one of our active union members early. So we didn't like that. So what we did was, number one, he and some of his union coworkers went in there and with the legal observer and confronted the boss right there. And the picketers actually successfully encouraged the New York Times delivery people to not cross the picket line.
Oh, wow.
That was a victory.
Oh, that's great. We're talking to Daniel Gross and Sarah Bender, union organizers, activists for Starbucks, not for Starbucks, but in relation to it as a reaction to Starbucks work policies. What can people do to get involved in closing? Is there any website or something? What do you got?
Well, you can get involved to help me get my job back if you'd like. First of all, I worked at the 17th Street and 1st Avenue Starbucks. If you want to go visit and say hi to my manager, Nora, or my assistant manager, Freddie, and just ask them, where's my favorite barista, Sarah Bender? She deserves to get her job back. Or check out our website at starbucksunion.org.
Okay, so that's where we can send other mm-hmm. Starbucks employees who are across the country, might be curious and want to get involved with this.
We're waiting with open arms at www.starbucksunion.org.
Daniel Gross and Sarah Bender, thank you for being here. This is sort of eye-opening to me.
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot.
We'll be back with the Cliff Notes and some closing comments. This is Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark. It's 47 past the hour.
Like busting up a Starbucks, busting up a Starbucks, busting up a Starbucks.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Our state variation. Call American Life, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
All right, we're going to land this thing. It's 51 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. How's that grab you? We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll have free coffee, tons of giveaways, plus we'll be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame and New York City Council Speaker. Gifford Miller is going to be there, man.
Yeah.
Can you believe that Gifford Miller is coming down?
Wow.
That's unbelievable. I'm sorry, I'm being condescending or whatever the word might be. Hey, look, if you want to come see me live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, this Saturday night, for tickets, call 201-727 1090-201-727-1090, or go to bananascomedyclub.com. Also, folks, on a serious note, we have been and are raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. And this is true. You really can. I mean, going to camp every summer because my parents didn't want me in the house changed my life. It made me realize that my parents didn't like me in the house, and also that I could make friends with people from different parts of the country.
There you go.
Yeah. But if you send $35, that will sponsor a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids, and $350 sponsors an entire week at camp for an entire child. That's at morningsedition.com. Click on the Camp Air America. Click on that for details and send some money. My mother sent some, but she sent it care of me. Now I have to figure out where to go give it to somebody. I guess if I go down to the office, I'll find the person to give it to.
You will.
Okay. So now, Kalo, you've been talking about – oh, let me just quickly tell people a few of these top stories real quick. Joe Biden wants to be president in 2008, so he's looking for the nomination now. Of course, you know, Biden's got some good and some bad –
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, there's also Clinton piped in on the Guantanamo issue. He said that, look, you know, something needs to be done. Either it needs to be fixed or it needs to be closed.
There you go.
Also, the civil rights case and the 1964 swaying of Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner is deadlocked right now in deliberations at 6-6, which is nuts.
Yeah, they're supposed to start again today, so. Hopefully they'll come up with something.
Porter Goss says he has an excellent idea where Osama bin Laden is, but we think it's just because he wants to be allowed back into the briefings where John Negroponte is running things.
Or either that or he's telling a bad joke to the reporter.
I don't know. But and Kalo apparently got off the hook. Is that true?
That's right. I was stopping the subway.
Yeah.
And,
this was just the other day. You were given a, what was it?
I was given a summons.
Indecent exposure?
No. For obstruction of seating. And I went to court yesterday.
Yeah.
And I got off. It was great. But I must say, I did have a Marc Maron iPod moment.
What are you talking about?
I was waiting to be heard.
Yeah.
And there was a baby just screaming. I mean, the baby must have been passing a kidney stone.
Okay.
Because
Ooh.
It was violently screaming.
Yes.
And I was looking in my bag for anything to, like, block out the sound. And I had my iPod.
What do you mean? How many options are there for blocking the sound out of a baby? You're like, I'm looking in my bag for a hammer to hit myself in the head.
I had aspirin. I was actually thinking about taking an aspirin.
Okay.
So I actually have my iPod. So
yeah.
I slip on the headphones,
yeah.
And I'm in another world. It's gone.
Yeah.
I can't hear the baby. I can't hear anything. But then I see the cop that wrote out the ticket.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to get all raged or whatever, but I can't. I can't do it.
You can't,
you know
can't
why?
Work up the anger. Why?
You know why? Because it's a slow song.
Oh.
I have the wrong soundtrack.
So now you're sort of like, oh, my God, there's that wonderful cop that gave me the ticket. Moving towards me in slow motion. He must want a hug.
Right. Hey, Chris, I got a question for you. Did you get this ticket after the 20th of the month?
Yes,
I kind of thought so.
What does that mean, Ryan?
That means quota. That's what that means. That means you got a certain number of tickets you got to write before the end of the month, and you write them for infractions like that.
Silly
reasons.
That's
what it means. Yes.
So spitting on the subway, maybe?
Spitting on the subway, you know.
What?
Any kind of small infraction that they can get you for, if you're one of those cops that hasn't written any summonses in a while, that's your time to do it.
So if you're going to spit or take the seat of an old person, you might do it towards the beginning of the month.
There you go.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Libraries say law enforcement officials do make inquiries about what books people take out. Actually, any use of the library at all is considered un-American activity. CIA officials said a lot of these inquiries are justified. We traced a book called How to Make a Bomb in 90 Days, but it turned out to be written by Spike Lee.
Ooh.
By Spike Lee. Saddam Hussein's guards tell GQ magazine about some of the former dictator's quirks. One of the guards said Saddam told him that he has to find a nice woman to marry who is not too smart or too dumb, who will cook and clean. Then he made what was either a spanking gesture or the international gesture for chopping off someone's head.
Oh,
you know, a nice girl. And then, like, you know, what? All right. Researchers say some response areas of the brain shut down during female orgasm. The brain scanner could tell if a woman was faking orgasm during sex, but appreciated the gesture nonetheless. Okay. Phrase of the day. Saddam's jailers say he... All right. Look, I'm losing it. Here's your phrase of the day. Saddam's jailers say he polished off a giant-sized bag of Doritos in 10 minutes. Wake up, sheeple. Giving a man that age that much sodium is a clear violation of Geneva Conventions. There you go,
there
Riley.
There you go.
What do we got tomorrow, my friend?
Well,
you
got Mort Milfington tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we've got an author who's going to talk about the Bible and God's love.
All right.
Have a